Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond. A podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch.
You're in a desert, walking along in the sand, when all of a sudden you look down and you see a tortoise. You reach down and you flip the tortoise on its back. The tortoise lays on its back, its belly baking in the hot sun, beating its legs, trying to turn itself over. But it can't. Not without your help. But you're not helping. This provocative statement is part of the fictional Voigt Kampf test used by law enforcers in Ridley Scott's science fiction film Blade Runner. It's used to weed out genetically engineered humans called replicants who've escaped from the space colonies and returned to Earth. The test is designed to provoke a physiological response in a person, showing that they're able to feel empathy. Only true humans, as opposed to replicants, are capable of doing so. But what is empathy? The second edition of the Encyclopedia of Mental Health has the following definition. Empathy, in the broadest sense, refers to an observer having some type of cognitive or emotional response to the experiences of another person. This is why researchers often distinguish between two primary types of empathy, cognitive and affective or emotional empathy. Cognitive empathy is the ability to perceive and understand another person's emotions. It's often referred to as perspective taking. Affective empathy refers to the sensations and feelings we get in response to someone else's emotions. This is caused by the firing of mirror neurons in our brain when we sense another person's emotional state. They mirror that state in our own minds, thus eliciting a shared emotional response. Although people often think that cognitive and affective empathy are closely linked, research by Stanford psychologist Jamil Zaki has shown that they actually activate very different brain systems, leading scientists to believe that they're independent of one another. Yet, there is another facet of empathy, empathic concern. In her book, The Empathy Effect, Helen Reese describes it as being the inner motivation that moves people to respond and express the urge to care about another person's welfare. This is what most people generally think of when they think of the word empathy. She goes on to explain, the main benefits of cognitive and affective empathy are that they spark empathic concern, which can motivate action and compassion. At the same time, she also says that while empathic concern can lead to acts of compassion, it can also lead to personal distress, as people feel overwhelmed by situations. This can depend on a person's mood, energy, or skill to be able to act on it. Compassion takes empathy a step further. When we feel compassion, we not only feel distress when we see someone else in distress, but we're moved to take action and to offer help. Interestingly, Zaki's research has shown that the brain areas associated with both cognitive and affective empathy support empathic outcomes. Is empathy in decline? In 2006, then-Senator Barack Obama addressed Northwestern University's graduating class. He said, "There's a lot of talk in this country about the federal deficit, but I think we should talk more about our empathy deficit, the ability to put ourselves in someone else's shoes, to see the world through those who are different from us, the child who's hungry, the laid-off steelworker, the immigrant woman cleaning your dorm room." Many researchers have voiced concerns over the decline of empathy, including Stanford psychologist Jamil Zaki. In a 2019 interview with The Economist, he explained that the most common way of measuring empathy is a questionnaire that hundreds of thousands of people have completed since the late 1970s. Following analysis of this data around 10 years ago, psychologists discovered there'd been a great drop in empathy, especially in the 21st century. Zaki explained, "We don't know the causes of this decline, though the rise of online technology and increasing polarization seem relevant. Whatever the source, this drop in empathy should concern all of us." Sherry Turkle, professor and founding director of the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self, says technology affects how we communicate and it impacts our relationships. In an episode of the podcast, speaking of psychology, she argues that in online communities such as the metaverse, we choose our community and surround ourselves with people who agree with us. We thus not only forget how to be empathetic, but as she says, people don't learn the skills of confronting themselves and confronting other people and learning how to compromise. She points out that while there are a great many positive things that can be done in cyberspace, it does limit us, as we don't have to interact with people with whom we don't agree. And we don't have to deal with complexity, friction, or empathy. These concerns have been voiced by many others, including Helen Reese. In The Empathy Effect, she writes, "Digital media is a far more ambiguous way to have a conversation." She goes on to point out that when we communicate using our devices, important empathy cues, such as eye contact, muscles of facial expressions, body language, and tone of voice, all disappear. We become less empathetic as we no longer have to process the emotional content of our interactions. As she reminds us, most major business deals are done face-to-face, not in text messages or emails. People want to be able to look each other in the eye, gauge each other's responses and body language before committing to signing off on a deal. So how important is empathy? Jamil Zaki describes empathy as being a psychological superglue that connects people and undergirds cooperation and kindness. At a TEDx talk at the Houses of Parliament in 2012, Cambridge psychologist Simon Baron Cohen reminded people that empathy is vital for a healthy democracy. It ensures that we listen to different perspectives and that we hear other people's emotions and we also feel them. Indeed, without empathy, democracy would not be possible. And even though it's always been considered essential for leaders, in recent years its importance has grown as research has shown its relevance for business outcomes. The media has even described it as being a leadership superpower. According to research by the global non-profit organisation Catalyst, empathy has positive impacts on a range of areas, including innovation, engagement, and intent to stay in a job. In 2021, Catalyst surveyed 889 US employees who worked across a range of industries to understand the effects of empathetic leadership on their experiences at work. They found that having empathetic leaders had a positive impact on innovation. 61% of employees with empathetic leaders were more likely to report that they were able to innovate. And engagement. Over 3/4 of those who experienced empathy from their leaders said they were engaged at work. Having empathetic leaders also influenced an employee's likelihood of remaining at their companies, whether they considered their workplace as being inclusive or not, as well as their ability to successfully manage their work-life balance. In a 2021 article in the Harvard Business Review, Rasmus Hultgaard and Jacqueline Carter put forth the idea that today's leaders need to connect with empathy, but lead with compassion. They cite research by Paul Bloom, author of the book Against Empathy, who puts forth the idea that empathy can cloud our judgment, encourage bias, and affect our ability to make decisions. He calls for more compassion. To this end, they say that effective leaders need to be able to take a mental and emotional step away when dealing with an employee with a problem. This will enable them to get a clearer perspective of what's at the root of the issue. However, it doesn't mean that they're being uncaring. They're just trying to find the emotional distance to be able to help the person solve the problem. By asking the question, "What do you need?" they're allowing their employee to think about what might help to solve the problem. Thus, the key is also helping the person to help themselves, to help them find a solution to their own problem rather than solving it for them. It's about coaching and mentoring and enabling them to help themselves. Conversely, in some fields, people are at risk of caring too much. Jamil Zaki points to professional caregivers, such as nurses, many of whom are motivated by a deep desire to help others. Expressing empathy has been proven to improve patient outcomes, yet at the same time an excess can be detrimental as the caregiver can become traumatized and fatigued. Zaki and others are now looking at how they can be taught to empathize in more sustainable ways. He talks about the importance of developing empathic concern, so feeling for someone, as opposed to the expression of emotional empathy, feeling as someone else does. He says, if they can cultivate concern instead, for example, they can care without falling apart. Contemplative practices such as compassion meditation appear to help people make this distinction, but this research is still in early days. So can we cultivate empathy? Contrary to what many people believe, that empathy is something that's hardwired into our genes, research suggests that it's not a fixed trait. In fact, it's more like a skill which can be honed over time. In a 2019 interview published on the Stanford News website, Zaki says, "Through the right practices, such as compassion meditation, diverse friendships, and even fiction reading, we can grow our empathy on purpose. Empathy is something like a muscle. Left unused, it atrophies. Put to work, it grows." Research into the cultivation of empathy has shown that certain attitudes are key. One of these is adopting a growth mindset. Research conducted by Zaki and Carol Dweck, a pioneering researcher in the field of motivation and mindset, has highlighted the role of a growth mindset. By merely believing that they could grow in empathy, people were more willing to extend empathic effort. As Zaki explains, people who were induced to have a growth mindset around empathy, as compared to a fixed mindset, spent more time listening to the suffering of someone of another race and more energy towards trying to understand the opinions of someone from a different part of the political spectrum. And of course, this is vital in today's world if we're to break out of our echo chambers. Another important aspect is a willingness to be fully present when interacting with others and to pay attention to what they're saying. Often, if we decide that we have a different opinion, we tend to let our thoughts drift and no longer focus on what the other person is saying. As Sarah Hodges, professor of psychology at the University of Oregon, says, "Paying attention to other people allows you to be moved by their experiences. Whether you're actively perspective-taking or not, if you just pay more attention to other people, you're likely to feel more concerned for them and become more involved in their experiences." We also need to identify common ground. It's thus important to focus on finding similarities when interacting with others, rather than concentrating on differences. Research by Jay Van Bavel at New York University has found that finding a shared identity can promote empathy, as people are more inclined to try and get inside the mind of the person they're engaging with. He points out, "We contain multiple identities, and part of being socially intelligent is finding the identity you share." This will also enable us to stop jumping to conclusions about a person. Being curious and showing interest are also important attitudes. By asking questions, we're able to find out more about another person's point of view, as well as come to a better understanding of it. This idea of trying to understand another person's opinion is also put forward by Sherry Turkle in a 2022 article for the Harvard Business Review. She says, "Real empathy starts from radical humility. I don't know how you feel, but I'm here to listen." We're accustomed to telling people what we think we share with them, when it's actually the opposite, not knowing, that can allow us the space for empathy. She gives the example of when someone tells us that they've lost their job. We might often answer that we know how difficult that is, as we've also been in this situation. Although we're trying to establish a rapport with the person, we don't actually probably know how they feel. She suggests it's better to step back and recognise that you don't necessarily know what someone else is thinking or feeling. Stop, look, listen, and stay open. It's not what you know, it's what you're willing to learn that provides space for empathy. Of course, this doesn't mean we shouldn't seek common ground, but we should refrain from assuming that others will react in the same way that we've done. So how can we foster empathy in the classroom? In a previous episode, I talked to the teacher Andrea Holler about the importance of literature for honing empathy in the classroom, which is of course a central way of getting students to step into other people's shoes. In addition to the ideas we discussed back then, students could be encouraged to think about how fictional characters might act on social media platforms, what kind of messages or visuals they might post, whom they would follow and why, and how others would perceive them. This would be a good way of combining digital awareness with developing empathy. The Making Caring Common project, developed by Harvard's Graduate School of Education, has a selection of tips for families and resources for educators to help young people hone their empathy skills. Helpful activities include the listening deeply strategy. Yes, as we've seen, being fully present and paying attention, so practicing active listening, is a key building block of empathy. Circles of Concern encourages personal reflection and discussion about those people students have empathy for, generally those in their own social group, and enables them to generate more awareness of those for whom they don't have empathy, and to widen their circle of concern. Virtual everyday gratitude provides students with opportunities to practice gratitude, something that's been shown to foster positive relationships and lessen depression and anxiety. On his website, War for Kindness, Jamil Zaki provides different kindness challenges to get people to exercise their empathy. The third one he suggests, disagree better, would work well in the classroom. He explains that empathy doesn't mean we have to agree with someone or what they believe, but it's about trying to understand them. So he encourages people to see beyond an opinion to the person beneath it. To this end, each person should find someone with whom they disagree. They begin by asserting their respective positions, but instead of then debating the topic in question, they each tell the story of how they came to have these views in the first place. The person listening should try to show curiosity and interest in their partner, rather than immediately judging them. We're social animals, and empathy is central to who we are. Yet, as we spend increasing amounts of time in digital spheres, and artificial intelligence systems become more prevalent, we need to ensure that we don't lose touch with what makes us human. As Helen Rees writes in The Empathy Effect, all parties are equally enriched when we perceive and respond to each other with empathy and compassion. After all, it's the human bond that adds the music to the words in life. Thank you for listening.
Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond, by Louise Carlton-Gertsch, was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.